In fact, he needs no introduction to most of us, Curtis Sampley. Good to have Curtis and Becky here with us today, and look forward to a fine lesson from Curtis. Of course, Curtis has served as preacher in the North Alabama area for many years, Beltline, I think, and Priceville are just a couple of the congregations he served with. And he's also served as campus chaplain at Ambridge University in Montgomery. So, with that being said, well, I'll just let Curtis come up and deliver our lesson.
Newfangled stuff up here, I'm not used to. I don't know what this is supposed to do, but I think they operate that up there. I just want to say a word. 47 years ago, I moved to work with Memorial Drive, and it wasn't but just a few weeks before I was introduced to people from Austinville. I became very close with, particularly with the elders of that time, and they were extremely helpful to me in many ways. When I went to IBC, which is now Heritage Christian, to teach, they helped in my support there. And when I went to Ambridge in Montgomery to teach, they again were helpful in that respect. Many people here that I've been close to through the years, Marilyn Whitson and Pat Robinson, were the kindergarten teacher and aide at Tri-County Bible School the year we started. Some in this audience served on the board of that school at one time or another. And I just want to express to you how much I appreciate your gracious invitation to come and to share with you this morning, and I trust something that will be helpful and interesting to all of us. I want to point out two persons. When I moved to Memorial Drive, Gene and Lila Page were worshiping there. Gene and Lila and my family became very close friends. They're very encouraging in every way. And when I went to Ambridge to teach, from the first day I was there until the last day I was there, Gene and Lila sent contributions to help me in my work there. And I just wanted them to know how much I have appreciated their friendship through the years, as I appreciate the friendship of all of you. It was December 20th, 1975. A letter came to Ann Landers in which a wife and mother was telling her how that on December the 20th, she and her husband and her children had gone out into the wooded area to get a Christmas tree. They cut it down, they brought it home. They decorated it and they put all of the presents under it. It was a joyful time for that family. But 2 days later, December the 22nd, the husband and father left and he never returned. It was a sad Christmas for that family. But the children wanted their mother to leave the presents where they were and to leave the tree standing until their father came home again, when they could have Christmas together. He never came. The lady was writing 2 years after that event. She was telling Anne that the Christmas tree had become a fire hazard, and she just wondered what she ought to do. When love is absent, terrible things happen. Love is the heart of Christianity. When Jesus was asked, "What is the greatest commandment of all?" his answer was, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as you love yourself." Sometimes love gets into a strain, and so Paul admonished us to let brotherly love continue, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 1. We need to remember that love is from a word that centers in the will. You know, we sometimes hear a young person, sometimes an older person, hear a younger person say, "I just can't help loving him." That's not true. Love is of the will. We will to love that which we love, and we will to hate that which we hate. We need to remember that love is always a choice. Love doesn't just fall down from heaven. Love is not just forced into our brain and into our mind. We remember that we have decided to love. There are three principles in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that I'd like to deal with today with you. If you have your New Testaments, I would invite you to open them with me to the 13th chapter of the book of 1 Corinthians. And I want to talk about the idea of provoking one another unto love and to good works. Notice with me, first of all, the first three verses of this particular chapter. I'm reading from the New American Standard. If I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but do not have love, I become a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but I have not love, I am nothing. And if I give my possessions to feed the poor and deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. I want you to notice here what Paul has to say about the essentiality of love. First of all, Paul says that love is greater than amazing and excellent speech. He says, if I could speak with the tongues of men and angels, but that was not done through love, I would be nothing more than a clanging cymbal. I don't know if Paul had reference here or not to the heathen worships of his day, but he certainly was describing very well the worship of Dionysus and Cybele. In these worships, they would blow on trumpets and they would clang on cymbals. But Paul says, even if I speak with great eloquence, if I speak with amazing tongues of angels, if I don't speak through love, it does not profit anything. I want you to notice the second thing that he says here is not only that love is more needful than amazing language, but he also says that love is greater than supernatural knowledge. What he's talking about here in the 13th chapter are the supernaturals. And he talks about supernatural knowledge. What if I had supernatural knowledge that I knew all mysteries? What if I could explain these in simple terms to anyone who asks concerning them? Knowledge puffs up, but love brings us to humility. You know, perhaps I would do better if I knew better. But I may have a head full of Scripture, but a heart full of sin. Love is greater than amazing language. It's greater than supernatural knowledge. It's also greater than miraculous faith. Verse 2. This is not the kind of faith that comes by hearing. This is the miraculous faith that was given by the laying on of an apostle's hand. I can't conceive of walking into a hospital one day and walking into the room of someone whose body is tortured from limbs being twisted, and I had the ability simply to untwist those limbs and allow them to walk again. Naturally, I can't think what it would be like to walk into the room where a person is dying of cancer and just say a word and place my hand upon them and they would rise up and return to their health again. But even that is worthless if it's done without love. Another thing he says regarding love is that love is greater than generosity. Verse 3. We often hear it said that you ought to give if you're unhappy and keep giving until it makes you happy. Sometimes our generosity is prompted by pride and not by love. You remember the vision of the Holy Grail. You remember when Sir Launfal, lying on the couch and being mused by the music of his organist, fell asleep. And in his sleep, he had this vision. He got on his charger and he rode across the moat. And there at the end of the moat was a beggar sitting there. He took a gold coin out of his pocket and simply thrust it into the dust before the beggar. He went on his search for the golden grail. He never found it. He returned home, and when he returned home, that beggar was sitting there in the sand or the dirt with the coin lying exactly where it had been thrown when Sir Launfal left home in his vision. Then Sir Launfal learned what love really is. He got off his steed. He took crusty bread that he had taken with him but now had turned to mold, and they ate together. And he learned that mercy drops down as rain from heaven. You might be very generous, but if it's not through love, it doesn't profit you anything. And then finally, he says here in the third verse also that love is greater than vicarious suffering. We hear people say from time to time, "I wish I could have died in his stead. I wish it had been me instead of her." The Apostle Paul wrote in the book of Romans that he was willing to be committed to eternal misery if it could mean the salvation of his people Israel. But he knew that that could never happen. But suppose we could give ourselves to be burned upon the altar in order that another person might be saved. Even if we did that, if we did not do it with love, it would be meaningless. As you move on down to the next four verses, verses 4-8, here you have Paul setting forth the characteristics of love. What is love like? What does love look like? He gives seven positive characteristics of love. And in that same passage, he also gives eight negative characteristics of love. I don't have time to spend a great deal of time with each of these, but I will spend a moment and look at these so that we can understand what it looks like. I might ask myself, am I a mature Christian? Am I a loving person? Am I becoming what Christ would like for me to become? Notice the first of the positive attributes that he gives here. He says, love is patient. Love possesses the ability to wait. It takes a while for a child to grow up. A student doesn't learn and become learned overnight. It takes time to mature a Christian. We need to have patience with one another. We're on a continuum. Some are here and some are here. And some are all the way in between each of those. And while we might at times become irritated if we permitted ourselves to do so, what we need to learn is patience. Be patient with those, learning that it takes time. Second thing he says here is in verse 4, that love is kind. You know, kindness always goes beyond the call of duty. We often hear someone say, "I've done my duty. It's time now for me to sit back and let someone else do that." That may be good, but you have only done that which is required of you. Kindness compels us to go 2 miles. It compels us not only to give our coat, but to give our cloak also. The third thing he says is that love rejoices in the truth. Love cherishes truth. We don't want truth to perish. We want to preach the truth continually. And even though it sometimes hurts, we desire the truth. And then he says, love bears all things. Verse 7. This goes in two directions. My responsibility as a Christian is to help with my children. I'm to teach my children. I'm to help get my children ready for places that of necessity they must go. Bearing criticism that comes my way is bearing all things. Christians must have the mind of a scholar, the heart of a child, and the hide of a rhinoceros. Tough hide, but a tender heart. And it's difficult to find both in the same person. In verse 8, he says, love believes all things. Love trusts in the promises of God. I appreciate godly men who have reminded me through the years of the trust that I should put in the promises of God. When things go wrong, when doubt comes and crowds in upon me, love remembers the promises of God. Do you concentrate on your problems? Concentrate on God's power. This tells something about you. Love hopes all things. Love is optimistic. We need more possibility thinking among Christians today. Too many wear belts along with their suspenders, and they still wonder if tragedy may not befall. Hope endures all things. It endures trials. It endures troubles. It endures difficulties and hardships. But it holds its road to the end. It does not quit or judge before the time. Are you a loving person? Paul tells you. He's trying to make you a loving person by encouraging you to incorporate these characteristics in your life. But having said that, Paul also says that there are some characteristics that must not be a part of the Christian life and do not equate with love. He tells us that love does not envy. Jealousy may be a child of love, but envy is always the child of hate. More damage is done to the vessel in which hate resides than to the one upon which it is thrown. You remember Andy and Amos? Some of you do anyway. Andy put a stick of dynamite in his shirt pocket. And he thought, when Amos hits me, it'll blow his hand off. He never thought that it would blow his heart out. Evidently, he didn't understand. Love is not boastful. But it is easily approached. A loving person can be approached. You can sit down with a loving person and you talk about anything you would like to talk about. He's humble. He can forget himself. He does not bestow his love on a person in order that he might receive a favor in return. Love realizes that no gift is too great for the object of one's love. Could the labor of my hands fulfill the law's demands? Could my zeal no respite know? Could my tears forever flow? All for sin could not atone. Thou must save, and thou alone. The church is greater than any one individual, and a little man dressed in brief authority is a sorry sight. Love is not arrogant. Love doesn't behave unseemingly. Love is not discourteous. It's not rude. Love doesn't run roughshod over other people. You know, some folks delight in their sharpness and their bluntness. And they brag that I'm a rather outspoken person. We need to remember that love does not delight in brutal frankness. There may be strength there, but there's no winsomeness there. You may have done what you should have done, but you didn't do it out of love. You're kind of like a man holding the door for his wife while she carries in the groceries. We must be considerate of the feelings of others. Always be polite and tactful. Love does not seek its own. Love is not selfish. It doesn't ruin or rule. Love is not found in the person who says, if it can't be done my way, it won't be done any way at all. If you don't play my game, then we don't play the game. It's not what does the world owe me, but what do I owe the world? Let me tell you, how you can be perfectly miserable. You build yourself a little cottage, a little kingdom around your heart. And you build a little fence around the cottage. And you hang some signs on all sides. You can't make me do it. I've got my rights, you know. Well, I'm concerned about number one. If you do these things, you will be perfectly miserable. If you don't get involved in the lives of other people, you will be a lonely old person. No one will ever come to visit your grave. And your children, when they come, when they leave home, will not return because it was never fun to be around you. When Dorcas died, there were many who gathered at the door. And some wit has said she needled her way into heaven. Love is not easily provoked. It's not easily irritated. Are you? Some carry their feelings on their sleeves. Somebody asked a lady on one occasion, do you wake up grouchy every morning? She said, no, some mornings I let him sleep. We can put up with a lot of things if we make up our minds to do so. A flat tire cannot ruin my day. I'll simply go through it and make my day worthwhile. Love thinks no evil. It does not look for mistakes in other people. If you look, you might find some mistakes in your own life, but it's always easier to find mistakes in others than in ourselves. George Crane was a noted psychologist. He also wrote a daily column in the Detroit Free Press. One day he told of a lady who came to his office, told him that she had fallen out of love with her husband and that she wanted a divorce immediately. Dr. Crane said, "It sounds to me like you really want revenge." She said, "Indeed I do." He said, "Well, let me help you. Instead of getting a divorce right now, let's do something good and kind, and then when the time comes, we'll pull the rug out from under him and he'll fall flat on his back." He said, "I want you to go home now, and this evening when he comes home, I want you to have a good meal cooked. And when he comes in, I want you to let him sit down in his chair, and you take his shoes off and you put his bedroom shoes on." He says, "For 2 weeks, I want you to do this, and then I want you to come back to see me." She came back in 2 weeks, and Dr. Crane says, "The time has come now to pull the rug out from under him." And she said, "What do you mean, pull the rug out from under him? I love him." A husband and a wife went to a counselor on one occasion, and the counselor said, "I want you to go home and I want you to make a list of all the things that you dislike in your husband and you, your wife." They went home. A week later they came back. He asked for those lists. The husband began to list some things he didn't like in his wife's life. He turned to the wife and he said, "And what is it about your husband?" She said, "I don't have any list. I love my husband too much to make a list of the things that I don't like." Love thinks no evil. Don't focus on wrongs. Look for good. A husband and his wife should love one another. Can you imagine what this world would be like if there was love in every marriage? What would this world be like if the church was full of love? Help people live better. Don't rub it in. Rub it out. Don't always defend the truth, but don't be so hard or cruel so as to turn others away. Love rejoices not in iniquity. "I can't stand him. I'm glad he's gone," we sometimes hear it say. We ought to be a hound of heaven. We ought to be following that person everywhere he goes, to show him or her the way back. Am I really a loving person? Are you a loving person? Here are 15 characteristics that describe a loving person. I'm not preaching about perfection. I'm preaching about the basis of love. Finally, I'd like to conclude the third point about love. And this is a point that speaks of the permanence of love. In the first century, those Christians were able to do miraculous things because they received miraculous revelation, and those miracles were used to prove how much they loved. The temporary was childish. Paul said, when I was a child, I thought as a child and I acted like a child. But now that I have become a man, I have put away childish things. In complete knowledge of ourselves, now we see through a mirror dimly, but then we shall see even as we are seen. If the world sees love in us, we can teach them. If they don't, they don't care whether we teach them or not. There's a Chinese legend that when the older people in that particular group were ill and were dying, that the oldest son would take him or her on his back and take her to what they called the dark place. The son took his mother on his back one day and started up through the mountain. As they went along, she began to break branches off the trees. Finally, it irritated her son so much that he said, "Mother, it's hard enough carrying you to the dark place without you constantly breaking the limbs on the trees we pass by." She said, "Son, I was not doing that for me. I was doing that for you. I wanted you to be sure that you found your place back home." In perilous times, love thinks only of its beloved. Do you love your husband? Do you love your wife? Do you love your preacher? Do you love your elders? Do you love your deacons? Do you love one another? Love one another as I have loved you. Horrible things happen where there is no love, but marvelous things happen where love is seen and felt in every way. I've not talked this morning about things that would lead you to Christ, cause you to desire to be baptized. I do hope that I've talked about some things that will help us to mature as Christians, to truly learn what love is and to practice it daily in our lives. We're going to offer the invitation of Christ. And if you're here and you have need in any way, would you make your way to the front while together we stand and while we sing?